Hello, writers. We are so happy to be sponsored by Author Accelerator, where you can train to become a book coach or be matched with a coach who can help you reach your writing goals. This is KJ, and I started this certification program this summer when I realized I missed my editorial work, but wanted to learn how to apply those skills to writers working on novels, not articles and essays. This program is absolutely everything you need to get started from the editorial, coaching, and business perspectives. It's also entertaining and inspirational and makes me want to leap in right away. Learn more at bookcoaches.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause. I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three.
Okay.
Writers, I'm KJ Dell'Antonia, and this is another episode of Hashtag Am Writing, the podcast about writing all the things, short things, long things, pitches, proposals. Every week, this is the podcast about getting in here and getting your work done. Once again, I am coming at you in the introduction solo this week, kind of getting used to it. Next week, Serena and Jess will be back with what I'm calling a masterclass episode in the differences between inner dialogue and telling your reader what your character or you are thinking. So it's going to have a fiction and memoir focus, but keep in mind that a lot of nonfiction has really strong memoir elements, and Jess is going to be honing in on that. So I think this is going to be great for anyone whose editor has ever perhaps said something to them along the lines of, I really need to know what they/you are thinking here. So that's going to be fun. But this week, I have a fantastic interview for you with Mindy Carlson. So just an update on all of us. Serena is working on a fresh Brooklyn Bruisers novel. Jess has finished her proposal for that next nonfiction book and is making applesauce and chicken pot pie. And I am, you know, hashtag jealous. Not of the making of the chicken pot pie in particular, but man, I would like to eat some of that. Me, I spent the morning stirring jam and trying to come up with a brilliant idea for a new novel that totally didn't work, but I have all of October to decide what I'm writing in November, and I have been hard at work at trying to come up with more than one option to choose from. I guess I'm trying to learn whether or not looking for an idea works. Right now, it's feeling... I don't know, people. I just want to be here if the muse would just please show up. I am also plotting some National Novel Writing Month, NaNoWriMo. Fun for the podcast, so stay tuned for that. All right, back to my forthcoming interview here any minute now with Mindy Carlson. I know you're going to enjoy this interview, so I'm just going to let... past me and Mindy Carlson take it away. I want to welcome Mindy Carlson to the podcast. Mindy, we are so excited to have you.
I'm really excited to be here. Thank you, KJ.
Mindy has just signed a 2-book deal with Crooked Lane Press. The first, Her Dying Day, comes out June 7th, 2022. And I asked her to come on hashtag Am Writing to talk about her road to publication because she revised and resubmitted her novel not just once but twice before signing with her now agent. So that's what we're going to talk about because that's a story. But before we get into that, Mindy, give us a little history. How long have you been a writer and when did a novel become the goal?
So I've been writing since, I've been sort of fiddling around with writing forever. But I've been really seriously writing since about 2014 or 2015, where I started doing parenting articles when we lived in Switzerland, because I got a whole different perspective on what parenting could be in that different environment. And I thought, you know, some of my friends would like to know about this. So I started blogging about that and then our travels, and it kind of just took off from there. And it wasn't until about 2000, 2017, 2018, I thought, you know, I could probably write a book.
Well, that, I want to hear about that transition. So I want to hear about how you sort of managed to get yourself to first sit down and start some words on a paper or a screen, however you did it, with the thought, this is going to be a book, as opposed to a blog post or an article or something shorter.
So, like I said, most of my articles were parenting articles, and but my true deep love is mysteries. I have always loved mysteries. I mean, I was 9 years old and I'd blitz through all the Nancy Drew books. And then my mom was like, well, here's an Agatha Christie. You'll enjoy this. So I mean, probably not. She was a librarian, so nothing was off limits really for books. But I sort of like, wow, 9. And I'm reading The Body in the Library. That's great.
Yeah. Well, Agatha Christie's pretty mild.
She is pretty mild.
I think a lot of kids start that way or follow up their Nancy Drew. I did too.
Yeah. I think it's the natural progression. Because at that point, like YA books weren't really a thing yet. So you kind of either went to Agatha Christie or you went to Stephen King. That was kind of the two options.
Yeah. Okay. So Agatha, I can see that.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people sort of drift around with an idea in their head or a goal in their head to write a book, but they never, and, you know, some people start and never finish, but I think more people just never start. So I would love to hear how you managed to sort of persuade yourself to take that time to, you know, head out on this adventure.
Well, I had these scenes and these characters in my head that just wouldn't leave me alone. You know, I just kept, this one character in particular just kept popping up and popping up in this one scene in particular. So then I decided that I would just write it down and get it out of my head. And then that kind of led to another scene, and it led to another scene. And I wasn't seriously writing every day. I didn't have like a word count goal yet. And it was just kind of like as these things happened, they would sort of jumble together into things. And then when I had about 30,000 words, I thought, well, let's give this a shot. And so I wrote it out, and that manuscript landed in a drawer. It will never see the light of day. But I think every writer has one or two of those that are your practice novels. You just kind of get it. You're learning the craft. You're learning kind of what it takes to get a novel together. You're trying to get it to, you know, 75, 80, 90,000 words. And then you read it and you're like, well, this is terrible, but you don't really know how to revise it yet. So you just kind of sit it in a drawer until you figure out what to do with it. And in my case, it's still sitting in that drawer and it will remain in that drawer. But then I had like another idea, like another, usually I start with opening scenes, like some opening scene will just sort of flash into my head and I have to get it down. And then I start figuring out, well, who would have said that? And like, what situation would they have been in? How did they get themselves into that situation? And so then I start digging into the characters a lot and building who they are and building my cast. So it wasn't until about, it was 2019, early 2019. Well, actually, no, I was still in Switzerland and I was listening to you guys. I started thinking, well, I should really sort of listen to what other writers have to say. Like what are they saying? And are they having the same kind of problems I'm having? So I started listening to you guys and I started listening to the Mom Writes podcast. And I found a couple other podcasts too, but like, it was a very romantic sort of situation where I'm listening to your podcasts on a train as it's whisking me past the Swiss Alps and the lovely mountain lakes. So, writing really became quite a romantic experience for me in that way. And then I just sort of learned by listening you guys, and then got onto different blogs and different website and started learning my craft. And then early in 2019, the author accelerator retreat the registration for that happened. And I really wrestled with it. Like, could I do this? Is this what I'm, you know, is this going to help me? Is this, am I being too audacious in my goals? You know, am I reaching too far?
What was the goal at that point?
Well, the goal at that point was to write this book. was to get, like, there was a character, and it actually became her dying day. So then my character June, and she was sassy and fun, and, you know, she was no holds barred, and I really liked her, and I was like, I want to do her justice, and I want to do her correctly. And so I decided that in order to do that, I needed to reach out and actually become part of the writing community and make myself at home there. So I went to the writing conference and I met you there, and I did the inside outline with Jenny Nash, and, you know, and from then on, I was just like, that's it. And I actually came home from that conference in September and wrote that whole book in 6 weeks.
Wow.
I mean, I had word goals. It was really motivating to be in person, in face connection with other writers who were in the exact same place that I was at, just starting out, trying to find your way through an outline and into your plot and through the story. And it was just, yeah, I just had a lot of energy behind that when I came home, and I actually made tons of friends there. I'm still friends with a lot of them. Four of them are in a writing group with me, so we actually pass our writing back and forth and have a text chain that we text each other about every day, every other day, about different things that are going on. And it's really just been lovely, and they've really helped me stay on track. And we were doing the sticker thing where we would text each other sticker when we hit our goals. And that really helped me just sort of crash through that book. And by the end of November, I had I think it was like a 78,000 word book, first draft.
So how did you get that first draft in November of 2019, mm-hmm. to the point of having a draft you thought you were ready to query?
A lot of revision. So, like, it took me 6 weeks to write that book. It took me, a year to edit it to a point where I thought, all right, I think I can have somebody read this, like somebody other than me, and I will not allow my husband to read it. Like, yeah. Like that's,
some people do, some people don't. I'm a don't.
It's better for our marriage if it's somebody else. So hilariously, I sent it to my high school English teacher.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yep. Linda Brandt. She has been a huge mentor for me in drama and theater and writing. And we're like, she, you know, all of her students are her kids. We still catch up when I go to my hometown. And so I sent it to her and I said, you know, I know you'll be brutally honest about this, and that's what I need. I need to know if this can go somewhere or if I just need to stop now. Because I like it, but I, you know, it's like liking your child. Of course I like my child.
Yeah. And you like it and you hate it, which is also kind of like having children.
That is exactly correct.
Yes.
So I sent it to her, and she sent it back with a gold star on it. And the note that said, I just read a pretty good mystery.
Aww.
So I thought, okay, I've got something here. I mean, she had, of course, like line edits and notes throughout the entire manuscript. Mm-hmm. But I was like, all right, yeah, okay, I could do this. So I went through and I started editing it with her edits and comments. And then I went through it again, and I went through it again, and I went through it again. I would print it out each time because I do better with that kind of visual spatial thing. So I have probably 3 reams of paper that is this book that are the different iterations. And then I read through it and I thought, I don't know where else to go for this book. I've tweaked everything that I can tweak. I'm happy with all the characters. I'm happy with the plot. I'm happy with their personal arcs. I'm happy with how the mystery goes. You know, a mystery has to make sense in the real world. And even as fantastical as it gets through the twists and turns of the plot, it ends, it makes sense. It feels very satisfying. So I decided that, okay, like, I'm just going to throw this out here and I'm going to see what I get. And I'm going to start with 5 and just wait. And then 3 weeks later, I'll jump it up to 10, Mm-hmm. And then I'm just going to, and then I'll do another 10 the month after that. And if I don't get any full requests or responses, I'm just going to stop. And I'm going to go back to it. And I'm going to edit it again.
Right. And how did you get the query itself ready?
Oh my gosh. Numerous blogs and websites. I'd like to thank every writer who has ever queried and then put their query letter up on their blog, because I have studied it and looked at it. But it was a very, and again, my writing group really helped me, because I've, a couple of them had queried before and they said, yep, have your opening. You need your hook right away. You need the block paragraph of your plot, but it has to be really zippy. And, you know, it has to, I like to say, it has to sing. It has to be something that people are halfway through and they don't even realize they're halfway through the paragraph.
For anybody who's in that part of the process, highly recommend Bianca Murray's podcast, which has a not safe for work name. It's the the crap no one tells you about writing. I like our clean rating on Apple, so I'm going to stick to that. But she's got two agents, and they read a they read 1 to 3 queries in every episode. They read them out loud, and then they critique them. And even though I don't query, it is amazing, because it's just about the core of those stories. So I've spoken about it on the podcast before, but hard recommend for that one.
Yeah, I wish that I had gone and done that, but it was I wish it had been around, so but it was the query. I have probably 4 iterations of that query letter at this point, where I did it and I sent it out to the first 5, and then for this next 10 I looked at it again. I thought, well, is this word really the right word? Or, like, I think I realized I used the word compelling twice in the same paragraph, which I was like, well, I'm going to, that needs to be tweaked.
Right.
And so for the next 10, I sent it out on a, like, the tweaked one. And then the next 10, I was happy with that. And I did, I got full requests right away on it, half request and full request. And then, and actually the agent who I signed with was one of the first 5 people I queried.
Wow. But okay, so how'd that go? Because that agent did not respond to you and say, yay, yes, right this minute, let's go.
That is correct. So she responded. So I sent the query to her on June 30th of 2020. So we're like full in the pandemic. Like, the pandemic is happening. And I had nothing else to do with my time except query. So I was going to do a darn good job of it. So she sent me a request for the full on the 15th of July. So I thought that was really great. 2 weeks, you know, after receiving the query, I get a request for the full. That's great. And then a week later, she sends me a really lovely note saying, I like this, but I need you to do some work on it before I feel comfortable saying, like, signing a contract with you. So she wanted, like, more internal life, you know, the conclusion she's reaching and how she's reaching it. She wanted more danger sooner. She wanted a clearer setup of what the mystery was going to be. I tend to be a little wordy with exposition in my beginnings. And so I was like, yes, I will cut all of this and make it a cleaner setup. She wanted more beats of the hero's background. She wanted just to get to know my person sooner rather than you really get to know her. I realized you really get to know her about halfway through the book, really know who she is. And she wanted that kind of feeling for her sooner in the book. Mm-hmm. And then she also said, take your time, which I didn't.
So how did you, I mean, I actually remember, because I think we talked about this a little bit, how did you decide whether or not you wanted to take her advice? Because, you know, there was no guarantee.
Sure.
And you already had queries out for the other manuscript, you know, for the original manuscript. And maybe did you have other fulls out?
I did. I had 2 other fulls out at the time.
Right.
But I looked at, I mean, of course, you know, we have our little diva moment at the beginning where you're like, how could she not just like it as it is? But I took a deep breath and came back to it the next day and said, and looked at it and then looked at my manuscript again and thought, okay, like, she's right on some of this. I can see, and I was willing to play with it. The manuscript wasn't so set in stone in my head that I was like, that's it. I can't change it anymore. It's, this is what it is. And I think as an author, that's one of the things that you learn. I think when you become like an author, you know, you're in the profession, you realize that nothing is unchangeable. Mm-hmm. You have to be willing to go in and take the critique, look at it dispassionately, look at, you know, look at what you have without looking at it like it's your child, and say, okay, no, I don't agree with that because this works because of what is going to happen in chapters, you know, 8, 10, and 12. Or you say, yep, I can see how she would feel that way about, I can see how she would want to know more about her sooner. I'm going to add that. I can see how the setup is a little muddled. So I'm going to go in and sort of, you know, carve out what the extraneous chaff is and just, and see if I can get it to be just the wheat. So, but I really felt rushed about it. Like I agreed with her, and there were some things I didn't agree with that I kindly sent. When I sent it back, I said, hopefully the other changes I've made have made these other parts a little clearer. Because I have some book within the book items that go into this, into her dying day. And she wasn't really sure that those were going to work. But I felt very passionately about them and that they really needed to be there for you to get to know the victim. And so I stuck to my guns and I said, those really have to remain in there. But I can do other things in the book to help make the setup for those flow better so that they don't come across as so jarring when you hit them in the book. So she said that was fine. You know, she was, I said, I'm delighted to do this. This will be great. And of course, in the email, she was like, you, of course, don't have to do this. You don't have to do any of my suggestions. You know, it's just if you don't, you know, it's going to be a pass from me.
Right. So the idea, I mean, this is a thing, right? It's called a revise and resubmit. And occasionally agents will do it. I think they don't, I don't have a sense of how often it happens.
It's getting more and more, they're doing it more and more. Agents, they, you know, they want to see if the writers got the, like how they are to work with, how receptive they are to critique. How, what their revision process looks like, you know, and they, it feels like kind of a test because it is kind of a test. The, I mean, the agents really try, it's like the shadow day. If you apply for a job, it's that shadow day when you come in and you do the interview and you shadow somebody around the office before they offer you the job because they want to see what your personality is like and if, you know, you can actually get along with the team.
Right.
So, I feel like agents are doing that more and more now, and for other reasons that I'll get to later.
How did you handle the other fulls that you had out?
I just left them out there. I wanted
smart.
I wanted each agent to see it as it was,
right,
like as I had intended to put it out there, because every agent is going to, when they come back to you with another rewrite and resubmit, they're going to have other things that they see. So I didn't use it as a nudge or anything. I didn't use oh, by the way, I got a rewrite and resubmit from other agents.
Yeah. I think that's probably smart.
Yeah. Because because I didn't know how it was going to turn out and I didn't want to, you know, prematurely end the querying on this particular book.
Right. So, but you revised and resubmitted to her, and then what?
Well, yeah, I will fully admit I rushed through the first resubmit because I felt like there was a deadline. I didn't want her to forget about me. Mm-hmm. I wanted to that previous book to be right in her mind when she saw how great this new revision was going to be. And, you know, and I felt this weird sense of competition at that moment where I didn't want her to fill up her dance card before I could get to this, which is a ridiculous notion. That is not how this works. But I was a newbie and young and like fresh in the industry. And I just, my heart was racing. I felt, you know, I was like sweating. So I went through and I did it, and I sent it back a month later. And she responded the month after that and said she still loves the book, but my changes were too heavy-handed. They needed she was looking for more finesse than she was, like, you know, machetes. You know?
Okay.
I'm not sure
I would know what to make of that. I hope she gave you examples.
Oh, she did. She was, that's the one thing about my agent that I really love, is that she's like, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point. Here's what I told you before, and here's what you did, and then here's, like, how I'd like it tweaked instead. So she's not giving me a full prescription for how to do this, but she's like, you know, these are the points I disagree with in this rewrite and resubmit. And she was like, but if you see things differently, or if you see things that you would do differently or in a more subtle way, she said, you now may be the time to revisit those areas and get it back to me. And when she just said revisit those areas. She didn't say and get it back to me. And I kind of read that. I didn't read that as an invitation to resubmit again. I actually emailed her back and said, I'm really sorry the changes I made did not work like I had intended them to work. But I see what you are going for now, and I know that I can do this. And so I would like, you know, I hope this is an invitation to give me another shot at this. And she said, absolutely it is.
Oh, great.
She goes, I love this book. I love the character. Your writing is fun and hilarious. And I want to see what you can do with it.
Awesome.
So I said, I breathed a huge sigh of relief. Because she was in the top five that I queried. She was like,
Who is your agent?
Abby Saul from the Lark
Group. Abby Saul. Mm-hmm. From the Lark Group?
Yeah, the Lark
Group. Okay.
Yeah, she's fantastic. She does exclusively mysteries and thrillers. So she's exactly the agent for me.
Right.
So I emailed her. Yeah, I emailed her back, and she emailed me back immediately and said, yes, and take your time. She was like, I don't need this back before Christmas. I don't need this. Like, take your time. Do the work that you need to do. And so this time I breathed and centered myself, and I got a book coach.
Okay.
My book coach is Dawn Ice. She's also a mystery writer. She's fantastic. I used her to help me with an outline earlier for a second book that I was doing. I needed a different set of eyes to take a look at it and make sure that I didn't have any gaps in that outline. And so for this, I was like, I don't know, would you be interested in working with me on this? Because this is what she's saying. This is the second time I'm doing it. I really don't want to screw it up. And I think I just need someone to guide me through what I'm doing to make sure that I am doing it in a subtle way and that I'm not really carving up the manuscript. And she said, yeah, I would love to. That would be great. So she and I worked on it very slowly. We took 4 months to get it right. We did it chapter by chapter, you know, really, and she was more of a great sounding board of like, well, here's what this to me doesn't make sense. Let's, you know, what can you do around that to fill me in? So she wasn't writing the book for me. She was really a great sounding board for the comments, and like almost like Abby's proxy in a way. Of like, here's what she's here's what she's saying for this part. So let's think about other things that could happen. Let's think about other ways that the scene could go down. And then you write what you think is the best one, and then we'll work on it.
How big a revision do you think that was in terms of words or percentage or?
Oh, it was subtle. I mean, I changed probably, God, between 5% and 10%. Like, I didn't change a lot. It really was a lot of nuance and adding a line here and adding a line there or taking out this line. You know, I didn't change huge chapters. No chapter got thrown away and totally rewritten. It really was a very, like, pinpoint kind of mm-hmm. kind of exercise, which is a really tricky thing to do in editing. It's much easier just to throw out the chapter and rewrite it rather than to go through and look for the areas that need more finesse and nuance.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's not how that's not how one would sort of start out thinking it, that it would be much easier to throw it away, start over. But that is the temptation, right?
Oh, yeah. And that's what I did the first time. Was I
machete?
I just macheted my way through it like I was going through a jungle. And
you're like, great, I'll rewrite this with more, internal dialogue or whatever.
With more everything. It was more everything. It was. And so she was like, okay, no. And I read it now and I'm like, oh yeah, what was I doing? No, but it was really panic is what it was. Yeah. It was really the adrenaline of the panic of I had like, oh my gosh, I really need to rewrite these things. So it was just a complete So apparently my overreaction is to just throw away chapters completely.
Tried to do that with my current editor. So the editor that bought my next book, which is called In Her Boots, is not the editor that is now editing it. And the editor who bought it would also have edited it. But, this was someone new and I hadn't worked with her before. And she called me up. I think I've told this story on the podcast. I know I told it somewhere. She called me up and she was like, all right, let's talk about this. I like this and I like this and I don't like this and I don't like that. And she sent me an editorial letter and it was basically that, let's tweak this or whatever. And somehow I hung that up with the idea that she just hated the whole book and I needed to rewrite the whole thing. So I re-outlined an entirely new book with the same people or something. And then I call her up and I'm like, okay, it's going to be this and it's going to be this and it's going to be this. And after I rattle on for 15 minutes, I suddenly realize I sound like a complete lunatic. And then you could hear her on the other end go, okay, let's take a breath. I am not asking you to rewrite this whole book. and of course she didn't know me. It was a moment that I hope to look back on and laugh someday. I guess I'm kind of laughing now, but yeah, I think that I'm just gonna throw it all away and start over. It's probably awful.
Especially when you're querying and you don't have any proof of your ability yet. Nobody has come up to you and said, this is really good and I'd like to sign you for this. This is really great. I'd like to publish it.
Even when you do, apparently, at least for some of us. So you submitted again?
I submitted it again and she got back to me. I submitted it in January and she said, okay, she's like, full disclosure, I've got a lot on my plate right now because the holiday stuff, but I will get this read in 3 weeks.
I love it when people tell you when. When people ask me to read something as a favor or as a coach or anything else, I'm always like, okay, just know I won't be reading this for the next week. Because otherwise mm-hmm. you sit there thinking they read it and they hated it.
They
don't know how to tell me.
Exactly. Oh, she's crafting the perfect email to turn me down.
Yes, exactly.
But so I sent it in January. So then a month later, so February 18th, she sent me an email asking for more contemporary comps. In the query letter, you have comparable titles, and my comparable titles were a little dated because my book is actually a modern take on some very classic themes. So she just wanted some more contemporary comparable titles and it felt like a test. Do I know my genre?
Yeah, that seems like a strange moment. Are we doing this or are we not doing this? I mean, here are the comps. But, of course, finding them is only going to do you good.
Right, exactly.
It's only going to help you, so why not?
I had actually been thinking very long and hard about where my books would sit in Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. What table would they be on and who would be flanking them? And so that really helped to have those fantasy moments. And so then the next day she emailed and said, are you busy at 1 o'clock on the 22nd for a phone call?
Oh, yay.
And I said, of course I am. And I wasn't, but I canceled everything.
Yes.
Because, you know that this is the call. Mm-hmm. Because you've already done the rewrite and submit twice.
It better be the call.
Yeah, at this point, it better be. So she made the offer, and it was wonderful, and I floated around the house for a good solid week, And but then I nudged all my other agents that had my full out, which was like 10 other agents, and said, by the way, I've gotten an offer. And so they came back to me with whatever counter offers. But I went with Abby because, number one, I just, like, she was in the top five of my desired agents anyway. But because of how she handled the rewrite and resubmit, you know, she was very thoughtful and she was very kind when I didn't do so good. And she, you know, and I felt like she stuck with me. Like, she was actually on this journey with me. And I just felt like that is the sort of agent that I want, is someone who's going to be with me for this entire journey through the ups and the downs. And she's seen the worst thing that I can do, and she still wanted to sign me. So, yeah. So that's, so I got the, so I accepted her offer.
Yay.
Yeah, it was good. And then we sent it out on submission. So, and here's part of another reason the rewrite and resubmit was actually really helpful and why agents like to do it, is that we sent it out on submission in mid-April. And within 24 hours, I had 10 editors that had requested fulls.
Wow.
And because the work was done.
Right.
All of the work she had me do in that rewrite and resubmit, it's all stuff that the editors would have asked me to do anyway. So my publisher for this book is Crooked Lane Books. And I got a contract from them like a month later. I had a contract from them. And I got my editorial letter, and it was two items on the developmental side and things that you might want to consider. Not even, I want this done. It was just, you might want to consider this thing and you might want to consider that thing.
Wow.
But if you don't change it, it's fine. And then it was one page of line edits. That was it.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I had done all the work. Because I had done all of that work previously with my book coach, and it was basically a done deal. Like, you just do these things and that's fine. And sent it in. I just finished my copy edits and got them turned in on Friday. And I need to up my comma game, is what I learned from that. Because I
too many or too few?
Too few.
I'm too many. Maybe we could, you know, I'll put some in an envelope and send them up.
That would be great, because I'm apparently stingy with my commas.
Well, that's fantastic. Congratulations. I mean,
Thank you. This
is amazing, and I absolutely can't wait to see the actual book.
Oh, you're going to get a copy.
Oh, good.
For sure.
Look forward to it. So I feel like you've answered this question, like, through this entire conversation, but it's something I like to ask everybody now, which is, we like to say on the podcast that luck favors the prepared. So we don't want to let anyone, and especially not women, attribute their success to luck. Tell us a time when you worked hard and then it made you what sounds like lucky.
Well, I mean, yeah, this whole story is definitely one of those things where it was a lot of work. So actually last week I interviewed Anthony Horowitz for The Big Thrill. That's going to be published in October. And that was a situation. I mean, part of it was being in the right place at the right time to get that assignment. But it was also like I had spent all of those years writing parenting articles. You know, and we also, the magazine that I was, that I would submit to hired me to be the editor then a couple years later. And as the editor, I was also helping to do their positive parenting conference. And so I was reading all of these authors' books and preparing interview questions for my interviewer to ask. So I had done like 4 or 5 years of really hard work of like learning how to craft these articles, you know, learning what it is exactly that my editor wanted, and then becoming that editor and looking at things with a critical eye, and then picking up the books and looking at the books with a critical eye and pulling out themes to ask questions on.
Right. I think people think, oh, an interview, that's a super easy article to write. I'll just come up with, you know, the things I want to know. And interviewing is really hard.
It is really hard, because you're like, oh my gosh, well, what if I ask a really stupid question?
And I ask the exact same thing everyone else has asked?
A friend of mine actually had an interview with an author with a name who I will not name. And that author gave one word answers to the interview questions.
Ouch.
Like, Was it fun to write this book? Yes.
Yes.
And that is it. They couldn't get any more information out of them than yes, it was fun to write this book.
Well, that's because that's not the best question.
No, no. I mean, it's also
because the author was being not the most gracious human being in the history of people being interviewed.
Right.
There's that.
Correct. But yeah. But it's one of those things where, yeah, so you have to craft your questions in a way that allows them to expand and not just give you. It's almost, I felt like it was almost like preparing for court. Like you,
we had, I think it was Celeste Headlee on the podcast, maybe a year ago. She is a NPR reporter, and she was telling a story of interviewing someone who was sort of famous for being that kind of interviewee. And so she'd worked really hard to come up with some, like, a different angle. And I think that her question for, I don't remember the details of the question, but the question was something along the lines of, you know, in the first scene of your book, why is the hero wearing spurs? Which made it like the author was like, totally like, yes, I would love to talk about spurs with you. No one ever asks me about spurs and I'm really into them. It wasn't spurs. I don't remember what it was. And I'll put the episode in the show notes so people can go back and listen. But yeah, finding that sort of thing that the author would actually, you know, like to talk about, whether it's their new kitten on Instagram or, you know, their decision to switch into historical fiction, which hasn't even been published yet, or, you know, just figuring out what's really going on with them.
Yeah, it was, and I will say this, that Mr. Horowitz is a very gracious interviewee. He gave me a lot of material to work with.
That is lovely. And he is pretty dang amazing. So that's cool.
Yeah, he's lovely. He is one of the nicest people you would ever want to talk to.
Cool. Well, this has been fantastic. You're one of the nicest people I would ever want to talk to. So I'm so glad we did this. Let's just take a moment and catch our breaths and then talk about something great that we have been reading lately. So I'm going to say you can go first. What is something good that you've really enjoyed of late? I'm guessing it's going to be a mystery or a thriller.
It is. It's absolutely a mystery. Well, mystery and thriller. So I have it here. The Family Plot.
You're the second, second person in a row.
Oh, really?
To give me that. Yes.
It's so good.
Okay.
It's so, so good. I mean, you've got the twists. You've got the turns. You've got, like, you know, four children and their parents who live on a remote island in the murder house, for crying out loud. How can you put that down? I mean, the kids are all named after victims of famous crime, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, the Charlie is named after the Lindbergh baby, and Tate is named after Sharon Tate, and Andy is named after Andrew Borden.
This is crazy.
And then you have Dahlia, who's named after the Black Dahlia. I mean...
Okay.
They had, you know, and they were, of course, homeschooled.
Well,
and
yeah.
True crime was part of
like
their...
Like you do.
Yeah, as you do, you know, when you yeah. are determined
Wanna
to
raise.
Give your children a true crime curriculum.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so. Hard. That's really hard. I mean, even the finest private schools just don't do it as well as you can do it at home.
That's true. I mean, the essays alone. Think of the writing skills that you could build.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I'm totally in for the family plot. People are going to be bored with me because I said this. I just interviewed Heather Chavez, who wrote a book called No Bad Deed.
Oh, yeah. She's great.
No Bad Deed. So good. So as long as we're talking thrillers, I have to name that one again. And then I have to think, have I read any other good thrillers lately? Because...
Did you read A for Aunties?
I have been dying to read Dial A for Aunties.
Yes,
I have been dying to read that. Okay.
Oh,
I'm just
so
putting
good.
It.
So yeah. good. I mean, it
and
starts
She's got
off,
another one coming soon, too.
Yeah, she does. The It's Dial B for Brides? No, Dial...
I don't know,
gets,
but if it is that, then she's got 20...
she's got 26 to go.
Yeah.
yeah. But yeah, no, she's really fantastic.
Fantastic. Well, I guess I was going to mention that I had recently read Laura Hankins, A Special Place for Women, which is not exactly a thriller, but it's kind of, it's definitely a mystery. It's definitely a, what is going on here? You know, it's like a different genre. It's more of something strange is happening. I can't figure, you know, the protagonist can't figure out, So without the murderers, which sometimes is kind of what I'm looking for. Like sometimes I'd like some creepy, but no, creepy, but no actual homicide.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a good suspense.
Yeah. It depends. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to throw that one in there. Something good that I have read lately. And all right. Well, this has been so fun. I'm so grateful to you for coming on and telling this story, which
well, it's great to see you again.
It's good to see you. So before we sign off, I'm just going to remind everybody that if you have a burning question about anything to do with your writing or career or something that you're trying to figure out, shoot us an email at amwriting@substack.com. We can't promise to answer every email, but if you ask us something we think other people are wondering about, we will try to give it an answer or maybe even have you come on the show and help you walk through it. So that could be a potentially fun thing as well. Another place to get good advice is always our Facebook group, so check us out there. And if you would like to get the show notes for every episode, which I'm planning to make a little fancier in the coming weeks, so more to come on that. Head to amwritingpodcast.com and there will be all the opportunities to sign up or to offer the show a little financial support, for which we are always grateful. And I'm probably going to be talking more about that in the coming months as well. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. I get to say the tagline because Jess isn't here. So, until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause. Stop.
Stop.
Thank you.